You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine. Welcome to Sponsored. I'm your host, Mike Powell. And this week on the program, we have Caroline Gleick. If you're not familiar with Caroline, well, she's about 5'1". She grew up in the Midwest, and she is a ball of energy. She started her ski career as a ski model, worked her way into a ski mountaineer, and it's been an interesting ride along the way. And we will find out the ups and downs from Caroline and how she made her dreams of becoming a professional skier a reality. So sit back, and here comes Caroline Gleick. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good, thank you. Getting ready for the holiday yourself?
Same.
I think home for you is Minnesota. Are you heading back that way?
No, I grew up there, but I moved here to Utah when I was 15. So my parents live here.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so I don't have to go anywhere, which I'm delighted about.
That's a nice thing.
Yeah.
What has your early season been like? I know everybody's been getting hammered. Have you been able to enjoy that?
Yeah, it's been such a good early season. I started at the end of October. I went to New Zealand. So I got 5 days of skiing there. And then I came home and I went up to the Monashies in British Columbia.
Okay.
So I got like a 3-day hut trip even before December.
That's crazy.
I know. It was crazy to go on like 2 film and photo trips before December. Like, it was a good way to start the season with a lot of energy and momentum. And then I went to Colorado for a day, and now I've been back in Utah, which has been really good.
So you've had a big early season.
Yeah.
And your career, it's one that's pretty interesting to me because I saw it at one point where I hate to say that it was ski modelish at one point, but there was some of that in the beginning of your career. And I say that because you have an amazing turn, but your career has kind of blossomed into a full on badass ski mountaineer. And it's pretty cool to see, but life started for you in Minnesota, and tell us how that started out.
Yeah, growing up in the Midwest, I was like a weekend warrior, and I got to ski maybe like, you know, on 1 or 2 ski vacations a year to Utah for a couple of days at a time. And I was always like in my older brother's hand-me-down jackets and skis, so everything was kind of big and loose and sloppy, and I like always wanted to be a ski racer because growing up in the 90s, that was like the coolest thing. Watching like Tommy Moe and Peekaboo Street on TV during the Olympics.
Yep.
That was what I really looked up to. And so skiing is weird because it really like captures the mind of the youth. Even if you're not a ski racer or a competitive skier, like I just had this big dream.
And growing up, you had 3 brothers, I believe. Is that right?
I have 3 brothers and 3 half siblings that are a lot older than me. So yeah.
All of them are a lot older, or your brother's kind of within your wheelhouse?
In my immediate family, I have 2 older brothers and 1 younger brother. And then with my half-siblings, I have 2 half-sisters and a half-brother.
And growing up with all those kids, were you the one that was beaten up, or were you doing the beating up, or how did that work within the family dynamic?
I think that I was mostly getting tormented a little bit by my older brothers.
As they should.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I was probably the tormentor to my little brother until he got bigger than me.
Gotcha. And that's not hard to do to get bigger than you because what are you, about 5'3", 5'4"?
No, I'm actually not even 5'1". I'm 5.5 inch.
Gotcha. I was going to say something shorter, but I figured that would be offensive, so I guessed high.
That's good. That's good. That's always a good side to err on. Yeah.
And when talking about your stature, you also have more energy, I think, than almost any person I've ever met. I've been on a couple trips with you, and you do not relax, and I'd say that in a good way. You're always wanting to do something, and has that always been a part of your life, that energy?
Interesting question, because I think, yeah, there was always a lot of energy. And I'm just so grateful now in my adult life to be able to keep my body in motion. But like growing up, sitting through school and stuff was always really hard for me. So.
And growing up in the Midwest, I think once probably October 20th hits, it gets to be about 0 degrees. And are you able to go outside in the winter in the Midwest, or are you stuck inside for 2 months when it's too cold?
I mean, you're stuck inside a lot. Like I definitely played ice hockey on the pond and I would try to play hockey, but my parents were really busy, so they didn't have a lot of time or resources to take me to sports practice or anything like that. So I think I would be really depressed a lot of the winters growing up there.
Well, you say time or resources, and I did a little research on you, and it looked like both your parents went to medical school. Are they both doctors?
Yeah, they are both doctors. So they were working all the time when I was growing up, and we had like 19 nannies. And my mom, when I was born, was like just finishing up medical school. And with so many kids, they just like, we would always do our family vacations kind of dirtbag style.
I can see that with a lot of kids.
Yeah, it sounds like we'd have this really, I mean, don't get me wrong. My family, like, we are okay financially, but growing up, we always just made a lot with a little amount. We wouldn't really travel on planes unless my parents were traveling for business. So we kind of, like, my parents would sew their own tents and sleeping bags to go camping with.
Okay.
And so we just kind of had this, like, frugality, like a Midwestern kind of, like, ethos of not really spending what you don't have.
Gotcha. And that's a great way to live.
Yeah.
And in that Midwestern upbringing, how did you get involved in skiing? I mean, was there any ski racing in your background?
I ski raced like maybe for a week, 1 year, but it was just an hour away from where I grew up. And there was no one in my town to give me a ride because my parents were working. And with one nanny and four kids, they just couldn't devote the resources to get me to the ski racing. So I did it like once or twice, but then it just wasn't really feasible.
Okay. And then where did you ski? What was your local mountain where you just go ski for fun?
I'd go to Mount Frontenac or Welch Village.
Okay. And where did you grow up in Minnesota?
In Rochester. It's in the southeast corner.
Okay. Is that near Winona?
Yeah, it's pretty close to Winona.
Okay. I just like saying that.
It's close to Iowa. Like, it's really flat there and really cold in the winter and pretty boring.
And where did your love of the mountains come from? Probably not that flat, boring area that you grew up.
Well, we would take a trip once or twice a year to Utah because my aunt and uncle and half brother lived in Salt Lake.
Okay.
So we'd come to Utah and ski Park City and then Alta and Snowbird and Solitude and Brighton. And then every summer from when I was like 10 to 15, we went on a backpacking trip to some of the most beautiful alpine places in the western U.S. So we went to the Wind River Range, the San Juans, and the Sawtooths.
Nice. So are you pretty much just sitting at home when you're not on those trips, just thinking about the next trip and getting back out there?
Yeah, like I would just daydream about being able to ski and about, I don't know, I would just be like lost in my world of daydreams about the mountains and be wanting to be there so bad.
And you moved to Utah, you said, at 15?
Yeah. So my whole family moved here like right in the middle of high school between my sophomore and junior years. So yeah, that was nice. But it was kind of like a weird time to move in my life.
Just because you're leaving all your high school friends and having to make new ones at a new school?
Yeah, and then you just have that weird, awkward amount of time before everyone goes off to college.
Yep.
And it was like, I was too old to start ski racing in Utah, so that was kind of crushing to me.
Okay.
I was hoping I would be able to ski race, but they were like, you're too old to start now. So I remember being really sad about that.
Through your high school, you transfer to Utah. And what's the experience like coming into Utah and being the new kid? Because I would think when there's a new girl in school, everybody's kind of interested in that person. And did you feel that or were you an outcast?
I mean, I just always felt like the odd man out there. And it was hard for me to find like my circle there. So I definitely felt like the outsider for sure.
Okay. And did it ever get to be normal for you there?
In Utah?
In high school there.
No, I was never normal in high school.
Okay.
I never really felt very comfortable at school in general.
Okay. And as you progress through school, do you go to college after high school or are you just focused on skiing in Utah? Because I'm sure when you get there at 15, you're probably putting as many days as you can on the hill.
Yeah, I definitely tried. But they had come out with like the new thing where they could tell you on the internet, your parents, if you were skipping class, like in real time. So it made it really hard to play hooky on powder days, you know?
Yeah.
I feel bad for all the kids now that have that because it's a lot harder to cut class. But no, when I graduated from high school, I was like really focused on trying to become a professional skier. And I was also really focused on finishing my degree. So I'd go to school the fall and summer semesters and take the whole winter off, like the spring semester.
You've got the big goal of becoming a pro skier. And I know you have some mentors out there as well that we'll talk about. But how do you initially start chasing that goal? I mean, I know it's through putting days on the mountain, but how are you able to be seen?
Well, one of my mentors, like my parents kind of saw this drive in me. And so they hired Kristen Ulmer to give me some coaching.
Okay.
And Kristen, you know, like one of the pioneers of steep skiing and like, you know, she had all the film segments and stuff. She taught me a lot of great tips for the business side of things and also how to ski dynamically for the camera.
Okay.
So she was like such an amazing resource. And I would just call all the photographers up and just like tag along with all the pro athletes and just try to improve my skiing. And just I was really devoted to trying to improve and make it.
It sounds like to me that at that point in your life, you're almost like the little kid who's trying to tag on and see what the older brothers are doing, saying, one day I'm going to be one of you guys.
Totally. Yeah. I was just like really eager. And I was just so, when I'm in the mountains, I'm just like so overjoyed to be there. So I think that having that energy and the stoke and like, it was really helpful to have that burning desire.
So how did you get your first sponsor? I mean, is it through just skiing ability or is it through photography? How does that come together? Because it's not an easy thing to do, especially if you don't grow up with the ski background that some of the guys who grew up out west did.
Right. And so I was just ski, Elsa, snowbird every single day. And I rode up the lip with one of the Atomic reps. Like he was the local rep.
Okay.
And we took a run and I was just like charging and he was like, we need to get you on a pair of skis. So he gave me a pair of demo skis to ski and it was like my first pair of like sponsored skis.
And you were pretty psyched to have those demo skis, I'm sure.
It was like the first pair of new skis I'd ever had, you know?
Yeah.
I'd always been hand-me-downs or like used skis. I was so stoked.
And what does your family think of, you know, you're finished high school, your parents are fully supportive of you because they're getting you a mentor, but your brothers and family in that respect, do they think you're crazy thinking that you are going to become a professional skier or do they think, no, she can do it. She's pretty driven.
I think they thought I was crazy because, well, the other really significant life event is like when I was growing up, we come to visit my half brother a lot in Utah and he was a big skier and mountaineer, and he would take us and organize the backpacking trip every summer.
Okay.
When I was 15, before I moved to Utah, he was killed in an avalanche here in Utah, like right outside of Salt Lake City.
Okay, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and so I think that my family was very skeptical, and they thought that skiing and like, especially backcountry and powder was very dangerous. So they were not like fully supportive because this event with my half-brother really sent shockwaves through my family.
Yeah, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
But you're still going to push forward and do that because that's what's driving you. And what happens next? So you've got skis from Atomic, and I just know driving through Utah or flipping through a magazine, there was a period where every picture you saw was a Caroline Gleick with the perfect smile, looking like she's having the best time in the entire world, and just the perfect turn. How did that all come about? How did you become the face of skiing in Utah and really all over the country?
I just worked really hard. I mean, I saw that I had this way that I could kind of like make my name and face in the industry through photos and video. And so I just really honed in on that for quite a few years because it was just the most clear path that I saw.
Yeah, and you blaze that path. And at the same time, I think it's a catch-22 because you are getting that exposure, but probably not the exposure you want in the grand scheme of things as a ski mountaineer, because you can get pigeonholed as a ski model. And I fell into that category of person that almost pigeonholed you. And it was like, whenever we're going to send somebody for a photo shoot, it's going to be Caroline because no one can turn a ski like her and no one is as photogenic as she is. And did you find that pigeonholing you in certain arenas?
I don't really feel I was pigeonholed by that because skiing on all those photo shoots and getting the feedback from the photographers and videographers, that was like my ski racing education, you know?
Yeah.
Like that was the closest thing to a coach that I'd ever had, was like Lee Cohen giving me like a frame by frame analysis of the sequence that we had just shot. And so I think that that time was really valuable to spend all those hours in the snow walking. It was really important for me to develop my mountain sense.
Yeah, and it's a tribute to you and your belief in yourself, because there's a certain point when we were working together where there was another opportunity for you to go, because where you were in my world really wasn't blossoming into the opportunity you wanted it to be. And you left and did your own thing. And I look back at it now and you laid it all on the table and said, no, I am going to be a badass ski mountaineer. And you can look at me as a ski model how you like. And you showed me, and I think the entire world, that you were able to do that. I know you were into climbing from a young age. And how did you get into climbing, and how did that help your ski mountaineering as well?
Yeah, like really all those skills from doing all those powder shoots translated perfectly well to like climbing and skiing these big mountains around the world, because I was used to spending 12 to 14 hour days on my feet in the mountains and breaking trail to get back up 100 feet to do another turn. And it was actually quite a relief to just be able to go as fast as I wanted up the mountain and not have to wait for the cameras to set up. And so I guess I always had this greater vision for myself. And along the way, everybody told me like I couldn't do it. I was too small or whatever. I wasn't strong enough. But eventually you kind of have to decide what you're capable of and not listen to anybody else.
Yeah, that's the way that you're able to be successful is when you totally ignore those other people. And you might hear them a little bit, but just believe in yourself and move forward.
Yeah.
And so your skiing took a huge turn from ski modeling to just going on some phenomenal trips. So in 2013, you won Photo of the Year. You shot with Liam Doran. And I remember him trying to come up and accept his Powder Award, and they would not let him up there. But that was the start of a huge year for you. You won that award. What else did you do in that year that really was the year of Caroline Glass?
I think that year I went to Ecuador and climbed and skied the three highest peaks there in a week. And that was a huge undertaking because they're all 18 to 20,000 feet. Like the highest one is Chimborazo, which is higher than Denali. And so it was my first trip to altitude, and to do it in such a small time frame. I mean, I think that project will actually be really hard for anybody else to repeat. But that was towards the end of the year. That was in the fall. So earlier that year, I think I had the BC trip, but then in the spring, I had this project to ski these 12 classic ski mountaineering lines in the Wasatch from this book, The Shooting Gallery.
Andrew McLean?
Yeah, from Andrew McLean's book.
That's pretty cool. Do you ever talk to Andrew McLean or spend much time with him?
Yeah, I see him around for sure.
Yeah, he's a wealth of knowledge in Utah if you have the chance to hang out with him.
Yeah, definitely. Also, I just really appreciate his writing. He's a fantastic writer, and his book is just hysterical. The way that he describes the lines in this book, I think it's really awesome. It's like a piece of steep skiing history, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have not read the book, though, and I need to because I know Andrew, and I can't say he's ever had me laughing out loud. He's definitely had me engaged in a lot of interesting stories, but I'd like to read some stuff that he wrote that would make me laugh because I think of him, I hate to say ski nerd,
yeah,
but, you know, he's got a quality of a badass mountaineer, and he's also a very cerebral guy as well.
Yeah, he's a character.
So it seemed like, you know, in my research on you, that you took some time away from really hardcore climbing, or you were more focused on skiing for a while. And then in 2011, you got back into climbing, and Liz Daly was influential in getting you back onto the rock.
Liz was definitely like huge inspiration for me. I mean, I would say besides Kristen Ulmer, two of my biggest inspirations or mentors were like Liz Daly and then my half brother, Martin, who was killed, because they both showed me what was possible in the outdoors. And Liz was such a huge inspiration because she was such a capable mountain guide, but she was so strong and capable, you know, both in snow and rock. And she was also just the closest thing to a sister because she was this really feminine, like she'd wear glitter nail polish, tweezer eyebrows on an expedition, like bring a tweezer. She just brought this femininity to this like hardcore mountaineering world that I could really relate to. And it showed me an example of what I could become.
For a couple years, I'm sure you were focused on climbing and integrating that into your ski mountaineering. And then it's all kind of came together around 2013. And that's when you were in Ecuador. And I think you did some things in Chamonix as well. But what are the biggest challenges that you find in ski mountaineering that you didn't really find in just this plain ski world?
I mean, definitely like one of the challenges is still finding equipment in my size. Because my boots are so small and my skis, to find a really, really lightweight ski that comes down to the right size for me is always a challenge. And just finding warm and technical enough gear that's like tiny, it still is challenging. So I think that that's been a problem. And then I still find that when people meet me, there's such a bias that they have in terms of like, I still am very small and like, I look like a little kid.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times I'll like be asking other mountain guides or people for beta, and they just think, who is this crazy person? She's going to die in the mountains. Like, she's not capable. And I think there's still so much implicit bias in people about what a small woman can do.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say in what a small woman can do. It's just a small person in general. When you look at you in first appearance, you don't think of a mountain badass. And that's the great thing about you is you figure that out after time. But first impression is you're just like a spark plug full of energy. But I wouldn't ever look at you and be like, yeah, she's a badass mountaineer. You don't have like the Jeremy Jones look in your face at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been a really hard thing because I'll be asking these people for beta and they'll still just kind of sandbag me, or like they won't give me accurate beta, or I don't know. I think that is just a frustrating thing for sure about our society in general. And I think it's really rampant in the snow sports and mountain guiding industries is kind of like that bias against small people and their capabilities.
Well, talking about bias against small people will give you the double bias. Do you experience any bias because you're a woman?
I would say, yeah, like, absolutely. There is a bias there. Just the way that we, like, talk about things. And, like, snow sports, we still have a really long way to go towards gender equality. And it's something where I want to kind of, you can think whatever you want about me, but at the end of the day, like, I think my actions will speak louder than any words. I do want validation, and I would love more recognition from my peers about my accomplishments, but at the end of the day, I'd rather just do the thing and then let my actions speak for me.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to do it. And it's one thing when your peers look at the route that you took to where you are. There's a ton of skiers that have taken the route of being a ski racer and working their way through. There's a ton of skiers that have taken the route of skiing bumps and competing in the freestyle circuit and making their way through to be ski mountaineers or ski powder. But the route that you took is completely different than any of them because you skied as a ski model for the camera. You knew that that was the way you were going to be able to parlay your skiing into a career, and you did that. So there could be a little jealousy because they look at you as she didn't have to do what we had to do. But at the end of the day, they have no idea what you had to do.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to make the best use of available resources, right? So that was just what I had. But I mean, going back to that, it's like you talked about with ski modeling, it's all about the turn. And I think ski mountaineering is the same thing. Like, you have to have that turn so dialed, and it's to ski like something so impossibly steep. It's all just breaking it down turn by turn and having that technical precision. So
yeah, I would say you have one of the best turns in skiing.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And I think anybody who questions that, I'd say open a magazine, look in any type of terrain that she's skiing, and then look at her skis and her body position. I think that kind of outlines it right there. And it's all about the actions that she's doing.
Yeah, I would say the other place where women have it much harder from what I've seen compared to other men is like with social media. There's like the troll situation. And I feel like there's a lot more haters that say a lot more like messed up things to women than men.
Men in general are assholes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to speak for myself and everyone else. And there is an immaturity level that a lot of us have. And I like to think mine, I know mine's still there, but I'm not an internet troll. But with those trolls, it's just a lack of maturity or self-confidence on their part. And they can try to make you feel like shit. And it works. It's some people read words and it affects them. And I guess that's part of the game, though, when the spotlight is on you.
Yeah. And I think when you're trying to like do things that not everyone's trying to do, and you're very competent in your space, it's like when you're doing something that not a lot of other people are doing, I think it's easy for people to jump in and have those jealousy things or just to be very judgmental. I definitely do a lot of coaching of myself to not let that affect me, but it is hard sometimes at the end of the day not to let those things get to you a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, when people are being mean to you, you can only take so much of it.
Yeah.
And it just sucks when they're being mean and they don't know you.
Yeah.
You know, if you did something and someone wanted to rip you a new one, sure, that's welcomed. But if you're just posting a picture and then people want to talk shit on you, yeah, that's frustrating.
Yeah, it is for sure.
As far as sponsors go in your career, you've amassed a really solid group of sponsors. And you can let us know who's supporting the life of Caroline Gleick.
Right now, I'm with Jaybird. They make wireless headphones.
Out of Utah, right?
Yeah, they're out of Utah.
Okay.
Patagonia is my clothing, backpack sponsor, technical equipment. I've been working with them for quite a few years, and they're like just awesome to work with. It's so much fun.
I would think that's a dream sponsor right there.
Yeah, I definitely feel the same way. I am so proud to be a Patagonia ambassador. I've learned so much about environmental activism and business and disrupting the status quo from being a Patagonia ambassador. And then Jilbo is my eyewear sponsor.
Okay.
And Jilbo is awesome because they're a French eyewear company, and they made the first glacier glass like over 100 years ago.
Wow.
So they're just focused on mountain eyewear. Yeah, they are the specialists there.
Nice. You're on a team with Glenn Plake there, I think.
Yeah, and also with Glenn Plake, I'm on the Lakey team, Lakey Poles and Gloves.
And you've been with them forever.
They were my first sponsor, and I've been with them forever. I love working with them. And then Cliff Bar, it's really important to have the food sponsor so that you don't go hungry.
Yep.
And then REI is one of my sponsors.
Whoa, that's a big one.
Yeah, they're awesome to work with too. And then Pret Helmets.
Nice. So that's a nice round group of sponsors. I'm not going to ask you about dollars, but in terms of your finances, has skiing provided a good living for you where you're totally comfortable and able to do the things that you want to do?
Yeah, it really varies year by year. And the other thing is when I started making it, it was like right during the Great Recession, like 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
So I like started from this place of nothing where there was no money for skiers. Everything was being cut. And so I just remember how desperate those times were for the industry. And so I just always have the feeling I have to keep working hard hard. And I just don't ever feel like you can take anything for granted.
With the ski industry, you find a rotating door of marketing folks. And one day you might have a marketing manager that loves you, and then they might leave and go somewhere else. And the next thing you know, you're screwed looking for a new brand.
Totally. I mean, it's nice to work with multiple companies. And then with social media and stuff, I get a lot of opportunities through that as well. And so it's nice to be able to have kind of a diversified portfolio, if you will, of income sources so that if one falls out, you have backup. Redundancy.
Are you sponsored by people off the snow for your summer activities? Because I know I've seen a lot of summer photos of you as well. Or do you just get into photo shoots for summer sports?
Yeah, I do a little bit of that. But I mean, summers are spent really training hard and then doing other passion projects and stuff. So I'm working a little bit with Keen Footwear. So that's pretty exciting to have a support for like summer footwear, which I like trash and go through really frequently. And then a lot of my sponsors like Lakey and Patagonia and Jilbo, they make Four Season products.
Yep.
So I really kind of push myself hard to plan summer, you know, off-season adventures as well.
Well, that is awesome. Where are we going to see you this year? What are your plans? I'm sure knowing you, you probably have a pretty booked calendar.
During the heart of winter, I'm trying to keep my schedule more open so that I can just be where the snow is.
That's smart.
Winter days are so precious, the good powder days. And so I just want to be like in position, ready to like get the goods when it goes blue. I don't want to be traveling too much during the heart of winter because the travel and packing days add up quick and they just kind of wear on you.
Yeah.
And my passion is really in those long spring days when you can ski like 10,000 vert lines. I want to ski the Grand Teton hopefully this year. And then I really want to plan to be kind of peaking physically. And I want to have plenty of energy in May. So I'm going to try to like not expend too much energy early season by just staying around Utah, having the hometown advantage, and then planning to do my bigger trip so I can ski like long corn runs. That's my dream right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty cool how you've done it because you have blazed your own path and done it your own way. And I don't know another skier that has achieved the amount of success that you have going the route that you had. And I think it's an inspiration for everyone out there that just because you're not a racer or you're not a bump skier or you're not badass from day one, that there are paths and it's just putting time and effort and knowing what you want to do. And if you follow the path of Caroline Gleick, you can make it happen.
Yeah, that's really nice of you to say. I think that having the passion and the stoke and bringing that energy, you can really forge your own path. And there's so many different ways. I like to think that I bring a fresher perspective to snow sports, like not growing up in that world as much. And so I think that there's a lot of opportunities to have like different perspectives and different backgrounds and more diversity and stuff in snow sports.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, Caroline, I want to thank you for coming on to Sponsored. I hope to talk to you again next season and we can kind of just see what happened in your season this year. But it's been a pleasure watching your career and it's awesome to see where it's gone because I will be the first one to say that I was one of those doubters and I was pleasantly surprised to be proven wrong. It almost gives me chills when I say it just to see where your career has gone. You knew exactly what you wanted to do and no one was going to stop you. So it's a tribute to you and thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
So that was Caroline Gleick. She did it her own way, and we have more Caroline Gleick on Inappropriate Questions. That's on thepowellmovement.com. But really, the exciting announcement that we have is a new show that's launching on thepowellmovement.com. It is The Powell Movement, and our first guest is Jeremy Jones. We're going to do an athlete each week, and then the following week, we'll do a business professional. So it's Jeremy Jones in week one, and then we move on to Pat Bridges, the creative director over at Snowboard Magazine. That show launches on January 16th. As always, if you have any feedback for me, you can reach me at mike@thepowellmovement.com or on Twitter, you can reach me at PowellMovement1. I hope everybody had an amazing holiday, great new year, and are enjoying all the fresh snow out there. Stay safe, and I'll talk to you next week.